Hello, Brodies and Brodettes of the world. My name is Caleb Walgren, and you are listening to Season 5, Episode 9 of Brody Sports Talk. Yeah, that's right. It's the last one here in the single digits. And speaking of single digits, a guy who knows only what it feels like to be number one, that is my co-host, Derek Rusnick. Derek, how are you doing today?
That was the best transition in quite a few podcasts. I really liked it. Hello, everyone. I hope everyone's doing okay out there in podcast land, which podcast land is right next to Barbie land, but that's a completely different story.
It's so much better to be next to Barbie land than Munchkinville. I was so worried that we were going to be next to Munchkinville, but a much more recent pop culture reference by my co-host.
What about Fanville, where you get all the Dr. Pepper?
I mean, we got to be close to that because we are in Dr. Pepper territory here as an Oklahoma-based podcast. We are, of course, it is Wednesday. We're doing our Brody Bites episode because it is still technically the NFL offseason. But by the time this episode releases, it will be 29 days until the season opener between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Detroit Lions. Oof. Feels like it's not that close yet, but I'm ready for it to be here. So first things first, we are going to go ahead and step away from the football field on this episode as it is time to hit the hardwood out in the land of 10,000 lakes, or not really because the team moved there. We're talking about the big man for the Los Angeles Lakers, Anthony Davis, signing the richest extension in NBA history. 3 years, $186 million, which keeps him wrapped up with the Lakers until 2028. Derek, I know that you are noted on this podcast several times as being a Celtics fan, or at least married to a Celtics fan. So Celtics fan by choice, question
by
mark.
Choice and by marriage, yeah.
What do you think of the Lakers keeping Anthony Davis for the long haul here?
Oh, this is the best thing that you could ever say to a Celtics fan, because we all know LeBron has maybe 2 years left. We keep saying that every year, but this is going to be an albatross around their neck in 2027. So having him on this contract, he's going to regress a little bit. They're going to want to make some moves, and that salary cap is going to hit. Of course, if you're like, hey, this is new money, and it's people are going to be making more down the road, and that time, yeah, I get that. But this is still $60 million a year, and I don't know if he's going to be worth $60 million. If LeBron walks away, then, okay, do you build around Anthony Davis and Austin Davis? And, who do you bring in that's going to be, like, that level of where you're going to contend versus a young Thunder team, a really good Nuggets team? Maybe the Rockets show up soon. The Warriors are still there. The Kings are still there. I mean, in your own backyard. So you're going to have to contend in the West. And Anthony Davis is great. He's a great player. But I think he's a little bit too injury prone that this is going to not be a great contract in that 2027-2028 timeframe. I'm not sure you're going to get the $60 million out of them that you want.
I think that's fair, Derek. In general, we're talking about a player who has been hurt on and off for a long time. It's almost hard for me to think about the fact that he's only 30 years old at this point, because it feels like he's been in the league a long time. I want to say he was one of the original one-and-dones from the University of Kentucky. And, like, he's 30. This means that it's through his age 35 season. Sometimes for the big guys, it's tough for them to keep their knees and their body healthy late in their career. I want this to work out for LA from the perspective of sometimes it's good to have good villains. Like, you know, it's not as much fun to dislike the Yankees this year when they are struggling in the AL East, but it, like, if they're winning and they lose a game or two, then it's fun to claim those. But, you know, if nothing else, I feel like this is the Lakers saying we have to plan on someone long term. LeBron's here for two more years. He'll be 41. We all know that Bronny's over at USC already. If Bronny's going to leave and get drafted somewhere, I think we all know LeBron's going to want to go play with him. Like, it's been no secret that LeBron wants to play with his son, which, coolest father-son moment that you can ask for, potentially. Who else are they going to put the money on? Like, the salary cap is so high in the NBA now. Like, do you really think that you want to be putting, let's say, $40 million a year on D'Angelo Russell or $40 million a year on Austin Reeves? Like, the money, like, I just don't know where else it goes. So even though I don't know that I think that it's pretty, because the contracts in the NBA are just so absurdly huge now, I just don't know where else you turn to and go, you know what, I think that this would have been the clear choice here instead. So Anthony Davis was going to get paid, whether it was the Lakers or someone else that needed to try to contend for a title. I just think it's interesting that he's going to be out there in LA longer and potentially have a longer LA career than LeBron, because let's face it, I don't see LeBron sticking around too much longer. And LeBron was only there for, I think, a season before AD showed up.
Let me ask you a question. And I want to go back real quick and amend one of my comments. I called him Austin Davis. His name is Austin Reeves. I should know that. He's from the University of Oklahoma. I had AD in either way. Okay, let me ask you the Eli Manning question. What if Bronny gets, he wants to go to a particular team and he says, I'm not going to play for you. And he only wants to get selected to certain teams. What happens then? What happens if he's a Dame Lillard of, because LeBron James has said, hey, I'm going to go play with my son at some point in time. And he doesn't have that many years left. I mean, he turns back the clock every single year and he's still a great player, but you know, how long is that going to last? And how long do you say, okay, I want to play until I'm 42, 43. And what happens when you hurt your legacy because you're really not that good anymore, but your name is just there. So Bronny comes out. I don't know if Bronny's going to say it. I don't think he would. But Bronny comes out and says, hey, I'm not going to go play for the Minnesota Timberwolves. I'm not going to go play for the Houston Rockets. Or I'm not going to go play for the Charlotte Hornets because I don't want to, because my dad's not going to come there. What do you, I mean, do you just not draft Bronny? And if you don't draft him, does he go and be an undrafted free agent and goes wherever he wants?
I mean, I think it's going to be a bit messy for sure. I think that either he's going to work out for some teams and they're either going to try to trade up for him and get him because he's only going to show up to some of the workouts, or somehow LeBron's going to go wherever his son is. Maybe it's, hey, he does his last 2 years in LA and then signs, or maybe Bronny's going to spend 2 years at USC. That's the simplest path. Like, let Bronny go to college for 2 years. Let LeBron finish his contract, which technically that second year is a player option. So if Bronny's going to declare and they like what's at the top of the draft, LeBron will just turn down his player option and all right, off we go for 2024. But I think he could slide in the draft because of the fact that there's just this known disconnect. I definitely think that's going to happen.
Okay, so this is when, at that second year, is when USC goes to the Big Ten, right?
It would. If he stays, that one is the one where USC goes to the Big Ten.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, what if other teams went to the Big Ten?
Well, before we do the Big Ten, speaking of conferences that numbers and math do not add up, let's go ahead and go to the one that kind of got the ball rolling for us last week. Let's go to the Big 12, aka the Big 16, as they are getting more schools from the four corner states, as they have welcomed the Arizona Wildcats, the Arizona State Sun Devils, and the Utah Utes, getting those Mountain Time schools, even though Arizona doesn't actually follow daylight savings. That's not really that much of an issue because that's more of a summer thing, but they are joining the Big 12 with Colorado, who went ahead and said, we'd like to come back, please, first. So, Derek, we know you're the Big 12 guy, and we know we're talking about 2024. So this year, the Big 12 is getting BYU, Cincinnati, Houston, and Central Florida. The following year, you're going to get Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, and Utah. Who are you excited for? Is there somewhere where you would say, if I could just have someone pay for my flight and ticket to go to one of these stadiums, this is where I want to be? Is it even for an Oklahoma State game, or do you want to see a different rivalry game in the conference? Tell me what's going on.
I want to go to Utah. I want to see... yeah, I know that sounds weird and all that. Like, there's Cincinnati, but they're gonna rebuild for a couple of years. There's BYU. I mean, I'm already going to Utah, so you know, one or the other. You know, Arizona is gonna be fun, but they're more of a softball basketball school. Arizona State is still there, so like Utah is 2-time Pac-12. Champion, they're probably going to come in as the second or third best team after OU and Texas leaves. So I really think that, you know, if I can get a Oklahoma State going to Utah, you know, that's where I want to go. I think this is going to be a really good ad for the Big 12. And I think, them bringing in Utah kind of puts a band-aid on the, okay, well, the Big 12 is just going to have a whole bunch of parity and just like, there's not going to be anyone who is going to be really good or nationally ranked or anything like that. Like, you're just going to have turnover every single year. And I think that Utah has put together a really good program over the last couple of years, and they're just going to continue to do it, I think. So, you know, OU Texas leaves, and that leaves Oklahoma State as the best. And then, you know, TCU is pretty good. Texas Tech is building a good program. Utah is going to be good. So, I mean, and then not even to mention what Cincinnati could do and UCF. They've been good in the past. So I think there's a lot of good things coming and a lot of changeover to, you're spread all the way across the country. You're going to go from Utah, you're going to go down to Florida, you're going to go up to Cincinnati. And then, you know, Colorado is a great place. So yeah, I mean, maybe I can catch a double feature. Maybe I can go on Saturday to a Colorado game, and then on Sunday, just drive over to Denver and see my Broncos. That would be like the best thing ever.
So I'm going to ask you this, Derek, because I want to get a spicy take out there, potentially.
Spicy takes.
So who would you like Oklahoma State to host for homecoming in 2024? Get that like almost sure win for a conference game.
Yeah. I want the pomp and I want the circumstance and I want Colorado to come. I want Coach Prime in our building, and I want Colorado hasn't done much over the last few years. So it's probably going to be a surefire win on that one, unless Travis Hunter is all of a sudden all 22 guys on the team and all that kind of stuff. But I want Colorado to come to town, and I want to whoop all over Coach Prime, because ESPN will probably be here. He's going to bring a lot of eyeballs to the Big 12.
I'd be down for that. Let's see Bull at the fourth going out there, getting the fans hyped up, and hopefully your beautiful music plays as you wave goodbye to Deion Sanders off the field, as Oklahoma State so does during their games.
There you go.
So we talked about, the Big 12. Let's go ahead and go over, like you said, to the Big 10. The Big 10, also bad at math, is going in 2024 to go to 18 teams, because that is the year that UCLA and USC are joining, and they are also extending that Western branch more by getting Oregon and Washington, which are, of course, the Ducks and the Huskies. Derek, I was not really expecting more schools to go like this when we were talking last week. I thought we might be a little bit more methodical and plotting than, and here are six more teams or like five more teams leaving the Pac-12 from last week, because Colorado was the only one leaving. And now we've got, like I said, the four corner schools in Arizona, Arizona State, and Utah, and Oregon and Washington are also on their way out. Just curious, what team do you think is going to do best in the Big Ten of either Oregon, Washington, or the other two new schools that are joining?
You know what? I see Nebraska beating all of these guys. Just walking through them. They're just go Cornhuskers, all that. So have I put in my bingo card?
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. You're good. We will accept that.
So in the first part of it, I think that Washington is going to be better. But in the long term, Oregon is going to be better. I like Oregon a lot. I've liked them for many, many years now. I think they do a lot of good things. When you got that money up there from Nike, you're probably doing some nice things. I was a huge Marcus Mariota fan during his Heisman season. I thought he could do no wrong. And Chip Kelly, probably needs to figure something else out. I don't know. He's doing pretty well, pretty good at UCLA, and he's headed down there. I'm going to do another spicy take on our third bullet point here. Lincoln Riley, the head coach of USC, will not coach in the Big Ten.
Ooh.
He ran away from the SEC. Oh, OU's going to the SEC. Nope. I'm going to the Pac-12. USC's going to the Big Ten. I can't win there. Yoink. And he's going to, whatever NFL team is going to call his name this year, he's going to go take it. He might even follow Caleb Williams out the door as wherever, because normally the number one overall pick goes to a team that's looking for a coach. Well, wouldn't you love for, let's see, who's going to be bad this year that doesn't have a quarterback? Wouldn't you love for you can't do that because Sean McVay. I was thinking the Rams are going to be bad this year, but
it could happen. He could stay in LA with the Rams.
I don't think Sean McVay is going to lose his job. Arizona, how about that? Kyler Murray, he kicks one Heisman Trophy winner off of his team to bring in another Heisman Trophy winner to start. I don't know. That's just too Cliff Kingsbury for for the NFL, but still. One of the teams out there, no, Arizona just got a new coach. I don't know. So
it could still happen. They've only kept some of their coaches for 1 year before, like Steve Wilkes. So I'm not sold that anything will or won't happen. You never know what's going to happen in the National Football League. And I do hear what you're saying. And even if he does coach in the Big Ten, you're going to say that all of a sudden Caleb Williams is gone. Who's playing? Who's showing up? And can anyone on your team stop the run? Because they normally can't. And you're going to be playing Wisconsin. Wisconsin's going to run for like 700 yards in the first quarter against a Lincoln Riley defense. It's going to be an amazing thing to happen. Well, no one will probably be at the Rose Bowl for that game because they don't show up until like the third quarter anyway. So enough of that random tirade for me.
Sorry, I went off on a tangent there trying to find
an NFL team. It was good, though. I think it's going to be interesting. You know, we've got a lot of unique things that'll come in. College football, Derek, you know how much I love it. We're going to have to see some of these team designers get funky with some alternate uniform concepts because Oregon and Michigan State, they can't play each other in greens. Like, you know, you got to have something else come out. Oregon obviously has a lot come out.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
like
that greenish yellow thing.
Yeah. Like Washington Northwestern. Like we gotta get something different. We need less purple. Like, are we gonna have a Washington gold uniform? Like, ooh, to match the helmet? I don't know. I mean, are USC and Ohio State too close of reds? Like, I don't know what all will happen, but I feel like we're gonna need to get some more fun looks, fun combos. And anytime we're going to get more jersey options, you know that I'm going to be a fan of that. So let's see what happens. Let's enjoy the roller coaster that it is as they are at 18. And I will say that the sad thing about all of this is what is left with the then Pac-4. Derek, I do not know if you saw this, but there is a new website out there that is called pac-4.com, and it talks about it being the conference of champions, and it features fierce rivalries, and it put up a schedule for next year as if it was basically like a triple round robin between all of the four teams that are left. Cal Stanford, Oregon State, Washington State. It is an unenviable position for these teams to be in. Derek, I will let you go first. What do you think is going to happen? What do you want to happen? So two different questions.
Yeah, okay. So I feel sorry for these teams. We all know that Oregon State can't go to the Big 12. Washington State, you know, there's some options there. Stanford could probably come to the Big 12 and turn in, you know, if you get two of them, you maybe Washington State and Stanford or Cal Stanford, and you can make an 18. But those four are probably going to have to rally around with the Mountain West, or hopefully someone can reach out to them, the, you know, across the country, because there's not going to be like a Power Five on the West Coast anymore. So I don't know exactly what to do. I mean, Stanford kind of holds themselves out of it. I mean, they're an academic school. I mean, yeah, they've put out Christian McCaffrey and they put out Andrew Luck and, you know, great athletes, but, you know, you go to Stanford because you're smart. Even though Richard Sherman went there, you know, Cal, great academic school as well. I mean, all of these schools are good academically, but Cal and Stanford are kind of a step above when it comes to. And so, like, it's kind of the same way you have at Notre Dame, where you go to this school and it's a higher level of a football player is because you can't, because they have such high academic standards. So, you know, I hope that another, you know, East Coast conference comes over and swoops them up, at least Cal and Stanford, you know, Oregon State and Washington State. I don't know what to do with you.
I mean, it all is very interesting. I could see a world where the Big Ten would take Stanford with Notre Dame, but I don't know that you're going to see a lot of things as far as Stanford doing something without Cal or these four not going together. There's just not a ton of standalone value in the teams that remain. And I hate saying that. Like, these are the lesser thans in their state. They are, Cal and Stanford are quite a bit more academic. Cal has not been football relevant in a while. I'm thinking maybe pre-Rodgers era there.
And Aaron Rodgers did pretty good job there, and so did Marshawn Lynch. Let's give him
DeSean that. Jackson also went there, but it hasn't been great since Jeff Tedford left there, which is an old name for Cal. Do I think there's a chance that they say, you know, we need to absorb or get absorbed or whatever with the Mountain West to emerge? I could see it happening. I could see it happening because then it would be 16 teams. You get Boise, you get Fresno State, you get the Nevada schools. It's more regional. It's just not big brand. And it's really tough to be like, all right, it's going to be Pac-12 after dark. Get excited for Washington State, San Jose State. Like, I'm not staying up for that game, Derek. I don't, like, I am a sicko for football, but I do tend to, I'll wait and wake up and watch the London game the next morning. I'm not going to stay up for a football game that I think I can just see a couple minutes of highlights for in the morning. Any other thoughts about these Pac Four?
Yeah, I don't mind that overall, because, you know, there's been some teams that have come out of those, out of the Mountain West and those types of conferences that have done really well, and we're going to expand to a 12 team playoff soon. But I do have one condition: if they do want to do that, every championship game has to be played in a Smurf turf. Everyone is, whether Boise State's in it or not, Smurf turf every championship game.
You'd rather do the Smurf turf than the Fresno State checkerboard?
Yes, I absolutely. Like, I wanted Boise State in the Big 12. Like, we can go to 20. We can do two conferences of 10 each, because I want Boise State in the Big 12. But I'm one of those, get all my toys together and only play with like six or seven of them. So, I guess I'll let some other conferences have some teams.
I think that's probably for the best. And let's go ahead and switch it up. We've talked a lot of college football on this episode because a lot has happened. But let's switch from the field to the pitch as we talk about the Women's World Cup. As the U.S. Women's National Team, they, of course, have been our featured team to discuss. In the round of 16, early on Sunday morning here in the United States, they were eliminated by Sweden, who is the third-ranked team in the world, in a shootout where the U.S. was up 3-2, had shots to win, had chances to save to win, and it just broke down. Sweden ended up winning on the seventh penalty kick, 5-4, on one that I, at least at first shot, Derek, thought for sure Alyssa Maher, the U.S. goalie, had kept out. They even showed like them being like, well, there's not a call. And she said, no chance. And I was like, dang, she's confident that that got saved. And millimeters, it went over the line by millimeters. What are your thoughts about what this means for the U.S.? What are your thoughts about the rest of the tournament?
Okay, so I do not want any U.S. national team, men's, women's, under 12, over 48 inches, whatever it is, like any U.S. national team to lose. But I am going to take some upside to this for two reasons. First reason is this was a very extreme age team. So there was a lot of veterans on this team that we're now going to say goodbye to. Julie Ertz, I believe, announced her retirement. Megan Rapinoe announced her retirement from the national team. And then you've got a bunch of NWSL players that have a huge and a really bright future. And they're going to be the next generation. They're going to fill in. They've got a little bit of experience now. And I think they're going to carry the torch forward. There's going to have to be some soul searching. There's going to have to be some tough conversations, maybe with coaches, stuff like that. But I see a bright future for the talent that we have. The second thing is this just shows you the talent level of the rest of the world when it comes to women's soccer. The fact that there's so many really good games and a lot of goals have been scored in this World Cup so far, and a lot of names you may not have heard of or teams that have come out of nowhere, especially with people who don't follow women's soccer that closely. I mean, Caleb, you're kind of an exception because you follow soccer across all genres much closer. But for someone seeing the Netherlands, seeing Spain, seeing Sweden for the first time because of the women, the U.S. team, this just shows you that there's some great soccer being played out there. And the future for women's soccer is very bright.
I would agree. I do think that in general, we're looking at a bit of the next generation is what you could probably call it. Trinity Rodman at 21, Sophia Smith at 22, Alyssa Thompson, no goals at the World Cup, but just getting out there, getting some experience even at 18. And then... one of the people that I thought was very impressive throughout the World Cup, Naomi Girma, playing center back for the U.S., she's 23 years old. Like, she was just back there with Ertz, taking care of business, keeping teams from scoring. Neuer is 35 as well, Derek. So when you were talking about some of these players, when you lose the fact that the goalkeeper is probably not going to come back at 39, I think that that's a fairly safe assumption. We're going to be looking at a decent amount of turnover between now and then, and it'll be interesting to see how they kind of prepare and plan for the future World Cup, because I mean, they do bring it every 4 years. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. There is no set host for it yet, because they're taking the bids. They'll announce it next year. One of the bids is between Mexico and the U.S. So that could mean we'd have a men's in 2026 and a women's in 2027. So it'll be interesting to see where all of that turns out, because I think we have a fantastic team and we just got to see where it goes. Now, as far as the rest of the bracket, Derek, we do have quite a bit of talent left. On the upper half of the bracket, there is Spain, and there is the Netherlands. They will be taking place in the first quarterfinal game. And then there's Japan and Sweden. on this bottom half of the bracket, you have Australia versus France and England versus Colombia. Not necessarily a ton of blowouts in the round of 16. Spain took it to Switzerland and France took it to Morocco. But I think in general, Switzerland and Morocco were some of the lesser expected teams to advance out. What do you think is going to happen? Who do you have in your final?
Okay, so I think that Spain and Sweden meet up in the semis. So Spain beats Netherlands, Sweden beats Japan. And then I have France beating Australia. Australia's put up a really good World Cup. I think that they don't move forward. And then I'm going to take Colombia over England. I that's just a shot in the dark on that one, as I like Colombia, I think, better on that one. And then, so we have on our final four, I'll just Americanize it and put, say, final four, Spain, Sweden, France, Colombia. I'll send Spain to the finals, and I'll send France to the finals, where I think Spain wins the whole thing.
I do think that one thing I didn't mention, because we didn't talk about a lot of the other games, one of the stars for England, Lauren James, got a red card in the match against Nigeria because she stepped and put her studs specifically in her opponent's back. So deserved red card, but she will be out against Colombia. So I think that would be an upset, but I wouldn't be stunned to see it happen. I'm going to go ahead and say, give me Netherlands, Japan, France, and Colombia. I'll keep my bottom half of the bracket the same. And I'm going to go ahead and go with Japan versus France for the World Cup. And I'm going to say that with it being over there in Australia, that Japan's going to get the job done. Mm-hmm. Currently, they do have the leader for the Golden Boot. I know we talked about that a little bit before. And it is a name that I'm not sure I'm going to say correctly. Hinata Miyazawa. So if she wins the Golden Boot, she currently has 5 goals through 4 games. That's obviously a good ratio, considering the fact that the U.S. had 4 goals for the tournament. So anything can happen. Next time we record, it'll be in the middle of those semifinal games. So I'm sure we will bring you another Brody Bites update next week. But on behalf of Derek, let's go ahead and wrap this one up. It has been a little bit more of a full-size meal with some of that conference realignment. So don't shuffle your plate around. Don't shuffle your headphones too much. Make sure that you subscribe so you don't miss a single episode, because we're going to have our NFC South preview coming out on Friday. It's going to be a good one. So on behalf of Derek, my name is Caleb Walgren. We are signing off. Later, y'all.
Bye, guys.